Hi, I'm Neil Munro. I'm the director of the Oxford Brookes Poetry Centre and of Ignition Press. This is an interview with one of the three new Ignition Press poets, Isabel Baffy. Her pamphlet, Ripe, is being published alongside Lung Iron by Daniel Fraser and Ephebos by Kostia Tsalakis. You can find out more about the pamphlets on the Poetry Centre website. And if you're listening in time, you can tune in to the launch, which takes place on the 6th of November. Again, just check out the Poetry Centre website or our social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram to find out more. But if you've missed the launch, don't worry, you can still catch it on record. Again, head over to our website or find us on YouTube where you can track down a recording of the event. Isabel Baffy is a writer and poet from London. She was the winner of the 2019 Vincent Cooper Literary Prize and was shortlisted for the 2019 Oxford Brookes International Poetry Competition. Her work has been anthologised by Verve Poetry Press, 2035 Africa and the Caribbean Writer, and she's been published in The Poetry Review, Anthropocene, Finished Creatures and Harana Poetry. One of the poems in the pamphlet, PG Tips, which was featured as one of the weekly poems on the Poetry Centre website, was shortlisted for the 2020 Bridport Prize, and another poem, Plantain, was commended by Andrew McMillan in the 2020 Verve Poetry Competition. Isabel is a board member at Magma Poetry. You can find out more about Isabel on her website. Just search for isabelbaffy.com and you can find her on Twitter. Congratulations on the pamphlet, Isabel. It's fantastic. One of the main ideas, one of the big ideas in the pamphlet is this idea of hunger as a big, strong central theme. But it's very complex in the way that you treat hunger. There's not just kind of one type of hunger. There's all kinds of different ways of sort of being satiated or not. In the pamphlet. How did you end up focusing on that theme and why is it important for you?
When I was writing the poems before I started putting them together for a pamphlet, I was actually thinking a lot about intimacy and different kinds of relationships, which is the stage in which poems like Gravida and Hotboxing sort of had their genesis, and a couple others. Like there's quite a few different kinds of relationships throughout the pamphlet that are explored. And so that was really what I was thinking about, different kinds of connection and wanting to connect and finding challenges with connecting and different things like that. But as I was editing the poems and trying to really go deeper into the ideas, I sort of began to see this undercurrent of danger and different kinds of hazards and the situations that perhaps we put ourselves in order to find connection. And that's when poems like Ouroboros sort of arose and things like the brackets poem, which that's all I know how to call it at this point, because the title has changed so much. So this idea that desire and destruction can exist at the same time and perhaps in unexpected places and unexpected ways. And so that's really how it began. Yeah. So I was really thinking more about the different kinds of hungers that propel us through life and where they lead us and who they lead us to and who they lead us to become. Out of that, you also have sui generis. So in that, I'm exploring sort of pre-colonial African-European relations, but then really I'm looking at sort of the nature of man and humanity and this desire to dominate and destroy and, you know, for conflict. And so I'm looking at it from all different kinds of angles.
Do you find that poetry is a good place to kind of explore those sort of tensions between things like, you know, destruction, creation, desire and the inability to have that desire kind of satiated?
Definitely. I definitely think so, because poetry, there's a lot of room for juxtaposition and ambivalence to exist in the same line. You can have metaphors that, you know, juxtapose two ideas. And so it's a great format for exploring ambivalence and conflict.
It's great that you name checked so many of the poems in the pamphlet there, actually, because you do get a real sense of just the variety of it in, you know, relatively, your pamphlet is kind of relatively sort of small space. And one of the other things that you do so remarkably is use that white space and spread poems across the page, or there's a huge amount of kind of craft and thought that's gone into how they are constructed. And that was something else I wanted to ask you about, the sort of ambition you have for the form. And you mentioned Gravida, for example, which is a poem that is scattered across several pages in the pamphlet in a way that almost seems like it's sort of bursting off the page in some ways. How do you think about form? It seems that a lot of the time the form responds very directly to the content rather than necessarily the other way around.
I usually write the poems first and then I will sort of think about how I want this to appear on the page and what the experience of the reader reading it, how I think that should be. And then based on that, I will, yeah, order the poem.
So when you're thinking, that's interesting. So when you're thinking about the, you are thinking about the kind of reader a lot of the time, some of the time, when you're putting them on the page?
With some of the poems, form was not so important. With that poem, and also Can I Throw This One Away and Start Again, I found quatrains were just quite suitable. I wanted the focus to really be on the words. But with a poem like Gravida, which is so much about fetuses forming in the womb and this idea of existence and becoming sort of this nascent, you know, idea coming together, the form was really important. And then with things like Call as well, which explores marriage from the perspective of integrity and faithfulness, like the faithfulness of commitment, but then also this undercurrent of restraint. I found it quite important that there'd be a sense of rigidity. Similarly with PG Tips, a person feeling locked into the experience of postnatal depression, I wanted the form to be quite rigid. And so it varied from poem to poem, how much the psychology of the poem should relate to the form.
That's a really interesting way of putting it, actually, the psychology of the poem. Like the poem itself has a sort of identity and a way of kind of expressing itself, and that comes through in the form. I wonder if there were poems, I mean, thinking particularly like the Baked Beans poem, which changed a lot in your drafting in terms of the form. Can you talk us through a bit about how that changed from, you know, the early stages through to what you've ended up with?
So the Baked Beans poem, that started out as more of a prose poem, and it had several sections. I think at its peak, it had about five different sections, and it spanned life in an African Bantustan, and then life in Britain and Birmingham, and, you know, the speaker's childhood and then the speaker's adulthood. And it was very broad, and there was a lot of movement, like geographical movement in the poem. And that was fun. And, you know, there was this idea of beans threading throughout. And then I got to a point and I just realized that the central idea of the poem was kind of lost in all these vignettes, dramatizing, you know, different family connections and different things. And so I just was able to sit down one day and think, okay, what is this poem really about? And I realized it was about the young child and their connection with their father and finding that and wanting that. And then the song from Ladysmith Black Mambazo was quite central to that idea. And eventually it all came together, thankfully.
That's great. That's actually a really interesting kind of lesson in terms of sort of for anybody kind of thinking about going back to the poem after you've gone through a number of drafts and thinking, well, what is it really about? What am I really trying to say here? And how can I kind of use the form or just get the ideas down on paper, which makes sense and kind of bring out the life of it, kind of psychology of it you're talking about. And I think it does. It absolutely works, you know, wonderfully well. And you mentioned another poem there, Call. And I wonder whether you might read that one, because that's very interesting in terms of form, but also just it will allow us to explore some of your other ideas that kind of are throughout the pamphlet, not just that poem.
Okay, this is Call. It will have and hold unless we choose to tear it. It will cradle waters which will break like vows. It will tighten when we panic our cord, tasting fear in the flood, adulteration in the blood. And for its sake, we will shrink, call it devotion. We will hear a symphony in the crush of bones. We will sneer at its plea to be loved, since it will not always be lovely. We will sense it is a precious thing and run our knuckles along its walls when feeling broken and seeking something to break. We will throw each other down, kiss open-mouthed to mask our rage, our regret. Ah, if any man knows why we should not, our fingers forming on hands eager to object, our sprouting teeth with which we grin and bear, we nude, we bare, we intertwined like knotted hairs. We will trampoline its weakest points and kick at the sound of voices, the buzz of midnight calls we only take when we're alone. No one ruins us like us. Sometimes, whilst posing for sonograms, you drape your arm across my shoulders, nestle my neck in the crook of your arm, and always, somehow, resist the urge to squeeze. And at times, our hands will drift behind our backs, secretly feeling for the door in the room we built around ourselves, the one we sealed because we never thought that we would leave. It will not break until we labor it, until our bond is ruptured by the crowning need to breathe.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. That was beautifully read. Could you explain a little bit there about the form? So when people, obviously people will buy the pamphlet and encounter it on the page, but just for now, can you explain what it looks like?
Yeah, sure. So the poem has a justified alignment with the margins at about 60% of the page or about around half the page. So it's quite a straight column going down the left side. Yeah.
So it gives you this kind of sense of, you were saying earlier, I think, about integrity and sort of tightness and a real sort of tight column.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there was a day when I was thinking about marriage and about how even in the face of pressures, whether internal or external, it's the kind of bond that when successful, you know, it withstands a lot and it is faithful and is integral and it holds itself together in the same way that a call does. And it is able to sustain that bond for as long as it's necessary, which, you know, in the biological sense is 9 months. And yeah, just thinking about how that can feel also sometimes or can be a bit restraining sometimes. Yeah.
So it's really a sort of real, realistic view of marriage, as opposed to, you know, sometimes you read those poems where it's this sort of a kind of love affair with the idea of marriage and something which might be seen by some people as being kind of unrealistic and a bit sort of fantastical. And it suggests this kind of, to me anyway, this kind of inextricable link, this kind of symbiotic relationship between the couple. But it has this kind of slightly more ambiguous ending as well, though, right? Where there is this kind of this crowning need to breathe. Why decide to leave it on that kind of slightly more ambiguous note?
I think because at the end of a pregnancy, it does rupture and it has to in order for the contents to be liberated. I wasn't therefore applying that same thing to marriage. I showed it to someone and they were like, is that talking about divorce? And I was like, I guess so. But, you know, I'm not trying to say that that is the end of every marriage or, you know, it's not like a straightforward autobiographical thing. I was just thinking about liberation and yeah, it just seemed like the right ending.
It's a great ending. It's great. It does, again, a bit like some of these other poems in the pamphlet, it kind of suggests you can think more broadly. It's not just sort of specific to one couple or one person. It's got a much kind of broader definition or a wider way that we can think about the poem and its meanings. What are your thoughts? I mean, you mentioned autobiography there just briefly. What are your thoughts about how much of yourself to put in the poems? And I don't know whether this is about you or you know, other poems in there. Are they about you necessarily? And maybe that isn't an important question for you. But how do you respond to, I guess, people who might ask you, well, you know, how much of you is in the poems?
I mean, it's a bit scary because, to be honest, quite a few of the poems are autobiographical. And so it's made me think a lot in recent weeks about which poems I'll be reading at the launch, because, you know, I have some very supportive family members. And like when I showed my mum the cover, you know, I was so excited. And she was like, oh, we have to send like 10 copies, you know, to extended family members, including my grandmother, who is quite a conservative Jamaican woman. And I was just thinking like, nope. Especially poems like Hot Boxing, which talk about alcohol and drugs, especially poems like Ouroboros, which talk about like underage internet sexual activity, like so many of them, like I was just risque in different ways. So my poems often come from personal experiences, not necessarily that I'm trying to write about my life, but I'm looking at the world obviously through my own eyes, and those are the only eyes I'll ever see the world through. And I'm looking at the dynamics of different things and the different principles and the different tensions of life. And so those are things that come into my poems. Yeah, so I do often put things from my life or ideas inspired by actual events into my poems, but then I do try to change details sometimes so that I'm not talking about, you know, someone else, or I'm not incriminating someone else. And sometimes it is a bit scary when you're talking about things, about actions where that you're not necessarily proud of, or you're writing a poem in which you are the bad guy. It feels a bit like a risk, but then sometimes an important risk as well, so that we can talk about social dynamics and the way we impact each other. And yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely does. I think that's really interesting in the way you're saying that you don't self-censor, because I mean some poets do that, right? Where they say, okay, I could put this in, and maybe they put it in a draft, and that's why some, you know, going to archives is sometimes quite interesting, because you find these original drafts and you go, oh wow, if I didn't realize that's what they were thinking of originally, and then the poem completely shifts from there into something completely different, whereas you're not self-censoring.
No, that's very true. That never occurred to me. Self-censor. Yeah, I often just write. Often what I tell myself is, you know what, if it's really bad, no one ever has to see it, and I don't have to send it out. And I think there are some poems that I might do that with. Like there's a poem that I've been working with Anthony Anaxagoru, who's been mentoring for the past few months, and there's a poem that I've sent him a few times, but I might not share it. And that's happened with a few poems, actually, because there are some things I talk about, like especially if I'm talking about race, it can be very difficult, and I'm always mindful about the impact that the poem could have on non-Black audiences, and not wanting to, you know, if I'm writing, it would only ever be to explore the impact of an encounter or a phrase or a word, or, you know, to talk about how my idea of Blackness and race has changed over time. But then I always question, what will this poem be in someone else's hands or in someone else's mouth? How might someone else interpret it? How might someone else use it? You know, what ideas might someone take from it? They might not be the thing that I want them to take from it, or I might plant an idea in their head that they never had before. So there's a lot that I consider.
That's really interesting. You see your kind of tension there between, on the one hand, not self-censoring and saying, okay, this poem could say something about an experience or say something about position in society. And yet at the same time also saying, yeah, but I'm also going to be quite careful here that I won't publish this poem or I won't send it out, but other people won't see it. Maybe, you know, a mentor, workshop, whatever. So those two things, are they in conflict with each other? Do you feel yourself kind of at times being sort of torn apart a little bit by deciding which way to go, or do they actually complement each other?
I think they complement each other, because the idea that I can say what I want and it doesn't necessarily have to go beyond my computer or my room or my notebook, that allows me to be very free and very frank. And then I can keep it to myself, because the therapeutic properties and benefits of poetry, they help me. They're not necessarily for anyone else. And so if it doesn't go anywhere beyond that, I've still benefited from it.
Just thinking about kind of how you were sort of thinking through ideas or thinking through these kind of big topics. Another idea that comes across a lot in the pamphlet is issues of faith, religious faith. And I'm also wondering, I guess, does poetry act as a way of kind of reflecting on your faith?
Yeah. So to be honest, it's not really something that I'm too ambivalent about. When I talk about ambivalence, that isn't one area of my life where I feel a lot of uncertainty. Of course, there's many unknown and unknowable things, but that's not really how faith and biblical references enter my poem. You'll probably notice there's quite a lot throughout the pamphlet, and that's purely because it's something, like the Bible is something that I look at, not as much as probably I should, but quite a bit, and that the people around me, not everyone, but some of the people in my life, it's what we talk about a lot. It's how we reference things. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's the jokes we make, it's the references. Like, once I went out to a restaurant and a friend of mine ordered fish and it was grilled fish. And then when he got it, he was like, oh, am I going to find a coin in this mouth? And, you know, and we all laughed because that was obviously a reference to Peter getting a coin from the fish's mouth. So that's just like how we talk. That's just those are the references that we use. So there's a lot of that. But I think I was using, in Simon Peter, for instance, I think I wanted to look at the questions that we all have about our existence and about the world, and how those might have existed for someone, for Simon Peter, someone who's well known. Also, that poem was in response to a poem by Emil Verheeren, who wrote about fishermen. But the way that he wrote about it was quite problematic for me. His depiction of the working class was quite flat and narrow-minded, and he seemed to depict them in a way that they had no sense of existential awareness, no depth, no fraternity. And they were just these sort of silhouetted, shadowed automatons working on the river at night. I was invited to write a poem in response to that. So I immediately thought about Simon Peter, and that was the direction that the poem took.
Yeah, so thinking about religion is really just another example of where you're kind of talking about your daily life, where it's just something which is actually integral to the way that you live your life. And so I suppose automatically and naturally it would go into your poetry.
Yeah, exactly. It's the language that I often use in thinking. So that's why it often finds its way into my poetry. Those metaphors are always somewhere in my mind.
Well, it's such a rich and complex collection for all kinds of different reasons. Thank you very much for speaking to me about it. And I'm very excited to see what people make of it.
Yes, me too. Thank you.